Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to another episode of CCT Live, the Cape Cod Times live Facebook broadcast. We bring you every Thursday at 9 a.m. We took a brief hiatus last week, but we're back. I'm news editor Patrick Cassidy, and I'm here with Tanner Stenning, who covers the towns of Sandwich and Mashpee, as well as the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe. And of course, we coordinated our shirts today. Today, we'll talk about the release of more records in the investigation into the shooting death of Yarmouth Police Sergeant Sean Gannon. We'll also talk about other stories that made the news this week, including a full slate of elections across the Cape, and then take a brief look ahead at what's coming up. You can take a look back at our past episodes and follow along on all our social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc. As always, there's tons to talk about, so we're going to get started right away. First of all, a story that has been coming up probably too often as far as the local ferry line is concerned. The members of the Woods Hole, Martha's Vineyard, and Nantucket Steamship Authority Board this week unanimously, there are five members there, voted to work on a request through the rest of the week. And we've been covering this story. Various reporters have been covering this story for the past 4 or 5 months, right, Tanner, because the problems have been going on for that long. And one number that jumped out at me in the reporting by Ethan Genter, who went to this meeting on the vineyard, was that there had been 500 mechanical. Yeah. You can't imagine that in the first 4 months of the year, mechanical cancellations of ferry service during that time. So that's a lot. And people are starting to get upset. Right. This meeting, I know I was listening to Ethan talk about it, the reporter who covered this story, and he said he had never seen a meeting attended by so many people on the vineyard. This was a regular meeting of the Steamship Authority's board, and they decided during that meeting again to seek this outside review. They'd been talking about it for the last couple of weeks, but they finally, I think, decided that it was just something that they had to do. So they're putting out a request for proposals to look at who might do the review. There was an initial suggestion by one of the members a couple weeks ago, I believe, to have a certain firm do it, but they decided to kind of put it out there to get probably the best deal. It could take a couple different forms. They're looking at whether it's kind of a top-to-bottom review, looking at the entire operation, or whether it's something that's more specific. They had already put together kind of an idea of looking at the maintenance procedures for the ferry lines. And again, this goes back to various ferries breaking down. One broke down off Martha's Vineyard, and people were stranded out there for, I think, 5 hours, which you can only imagine what that was like. But it was interesting, the people who stood up at this meeting this week and spoke about it, because there was a range. There was, you know, business folks who said it was hurting their bottom line. This construction company owner said that he was having to pay his workers extra as they waited around for ferries. And then even the airport out there said, well, we need our fuel, and our fuel comes over on ferries, an interesting intersection of different transportation modes. So they're going to look for this outside review, and they're going to supposed to come back with a recommendation on the responses they get for this request for proposals, and decide at their next meeting in June, I believe. Certainly a lot of people are watching this. It has a lot of effects on a lot of folks. And again, this week, as I mentioned earlier, was a big week for elections. And you had a story in the paper today, right, about some questions that had come up about the use of emails and work emails by town officials. What can you tell us about that story? And this is out of Mashpee.
Right, right. So, again, this was election madness week. So on there were a couple of email communications that one of which we had obtained yesterday after the Mashpee election on Tuesday. But the first one that sort of made a splash on social media came from the Mashpee school superintendent, Patricia DeBoer, who had taken a message that was posted on Facebook from a sitting school committee member. And that message had, you know, kind of discussed the two incumbents who were up for reelection. And the two incumbents who ultimately were reelected were pretty safe up until last week when there were two write-in candidates that at the last minute decided to join with a write-in campaign. But so the issue that we found was that Ms. DeBoer had taken this message that basically she says was a message that urged people to get out and just vote in the election. But when you look at it, there's a discussion, quite a lengthy discussion of the qualifications of the two incumbents. And, you know, that sort of perked our attention and we come to find out that could be a violation of, state campaign finance law.
Which are pretty strict about the use of, again, official emails.
Right.
You're a municipal employee, you're a state employee. The idea is you're not supposed to be campaigning for somebody
right.
using the resources of the state that are paid for with taxpayer dollars.
Right. You can't use public resources for political purposes in that manner. And that, according to a spokesperson for the Massachusetts State Office of Political Finance, says that that derives from a Supreme Court case back in the 70s that basically said, you know, public resources can't be used for political purposes. So there was some discussion about that on social media, which sort of led to the Times obtaining another email from one of the incumbents who was reelected on Tuesday. That was George Schmidt. And we had obtained an email from Schmidt that he had sent to Gail Wilson, who is the Human Services Director in Mashpee. Essentially, this email Schmidt was asking Wilson to send out a reminder to a town entity, a town group, a task force, that he was up for reelection, reminding, you know, these folks that he was on the ballot. The election's Tuesday, but this was a private email that was sent from a sitting school committee member to another town official using town email.
Well, and again, I was going to say private email. It was actually sent through his school committee
account. His school committee account,
which is the
correct.
Key. If he had sent it privately to her, there would probably be no question as to it was his private email. He's campaigning. He can do that. She could probably, you know, not do something with it through her work email account. But it's kind of on her at that point. In this case, he sent it through his school committee account, which
right.
is where the rubber meets the road in this case. And again, one of the interesting quotes in that email from him or in that note from him was, "I understand through the grapevine there's a massive effort underway to try and unseat me in the election tomorrow." So it really does get at him asking not just to get out the vote, but, you know, presumably to get out the vote for him, and asking her to do that through this task force that you mentioned.
Right. And in the state law, it mentions certain criteria. If a communication advocates expressly for a town official, it's certainly problematic. So language such as "get out to vote for X, reject Y," that's the sort of language that can become problematic. But also in the law, there is a provision for, you know, vague advocacy. If a message looks as though it appears to be endorsing a candidate, that can also be problematic and be a violation of state law.
And it's important to note that Wilson did not forward it through the task force.
Right.
She had contacted the town administrator and town manager and said, "What should I do?" And Rodney Collins, who is the town manager, said, "Don't do anything. Don't do
right,
anything
right.
with it." He probably has a pretty firm grasp of where the pitfalls lie here. So obviously it raises some questions about the initial sending. And I think you got Patricia DeBoer on the phone, and what was her response?
Well, she responds by email. So we had an email exchange, and she essentially said that the message was not intended as an endorsement, and that she apologized if it may have been interpreted that way. Again, you know, it may not have necessarily been a malicious act to forward an email, but the fact that it was careless does raise questions still.
Yeah, and I think it was one of those where if you look at the message, I guess you could see her looking at the top of the message and seeing it as a get out the vote message,
right.
and maybe not reading. And again, we don't know what she read in terms of the entire message, but maybe not reading further down where
right.
it starts to get at these candidates and these
qualifications
and everything along those lines. So interesting, again, something that town officials always have to be cognizant of. There are these pitfalls when you're emailing and the campaigns come along and you're used to using different emails for work. And then all of a sudden you're using those same emails for what's essentially a private campaign for an office.
Right.
And a lot of these offices are, you know, they're not high paying jobs. So it's not necessarily as if they're going to reap some great benefit, except for the fact that they then get that status as a school committee member and are able to be in that position. So interesting, Mashpee election did happen in the midst of a whole lot of other elections. And as you said, within that election, Gorman and Schmidt were reelected. Gorman was the other school committee candidate here, who was an incumbent, right? So they beat out the two late write-in candidates in the end. I guess what was turnout like in that election? And there were eight others we'll get into real quick here, but what was turnout like?
Yeah, it was around 13% of overall voters, which I was there. The town manager was there. He didn't really have a comment either way about that, but seems to be on the low side, obviously, given that there's many more people who are enrolled to vote. And as far as the election itself, or I should say the ballot questions, both were passed. The one ballot question dealt with Mashpee's obligation to Cape Cod Technical Regional High School. That debt exclusion was passed. The other ballot question was a non-binding vote on whether or not folks wanted to see recreational marijuana establishments in town. They rejected that. They said they don't want to see pot shops in town.
So they approved the measure.
They approved the measure. Yeah,
said they would like to see them prohibited.
Right,
down one
right.
of those backwards kind of
it's
questions.
Very counterintuitive.
But again, that Cape Tech vote. Cape Tech is the technical high school in Harwich, where they're looking to build a new school. I think at a price tag of $128 million. Yeah. There are 12 towns involved. They all had to approve it through a kind of a special town meeting that occurred recently. And then this is them agreeing to pay for it. Important to note that the cost is not on any of these ballots. So
right.
that's still to come. But they know generally based on the overall cost what it's going to cost each town. And it was a contentious leading up to the special town meeting. But once that happened, the towns were on the hook to pay for it. It's just a matter of how they do it.
Right.
Towns had to decide whether to, you know, go with a debt exclusion, which is a temporary tax increase over a period of time for the borrowing, or find that money somewhere else. And most towns that did take it up during these elections went with some sort of debt exclusion or some sort of way of paying for it. So it gained approval in all the towns that decided on it. And there were a number of towns taking up that issue and a lot of other issues. As I said, there were eight elections overall on Tuesday night. A little hectic here as we tried to cover all that on deadline, but we made it all into the paper. It all made it into the paper. As you mentioned, Mashpee had a 13% turnout. I think the high turnout was like 29.7% in Falmouth.
Wow.
In Falmouth, they had a big question about the money for a new turf field. That's been something that Falmouth has been talking about for months now. They ended up approving that money. It was about $3 million. It was the turf field and a number of other sundry items that are included in that. Just going really quickly here, and again, you can check all this out on CapeCodTimes.com/politics, which has all the election results there, but kind of on a quick town-by-town basis. Town of Dennis, there was a close race for selectman Christopher Flanagan of Dennisport, beat out three other candidates there, including Dustin Pinot, who's the director of Beach and Recreation there, beat him out by only 16 votes.
Wow.
He wasn't ready to comment that night on the issue, but the results, he was worried that the results weren't official. Terry Bunce, who runs the show out there in terms of elections in Dennis, made those results official the next day. So Christopher Flanagan is the next selectman. He's replacing Cleon Turner, who has been in town and state government for quite a while, former a police officer, and spent a lot of time up at the state house as a state representative. So Christopher Flanagan wins in Dennis. They also approved their school funding there as well. In Eastham, they banged through four debt exclusion questions to improve the quality of Salt Pond, which is a very well-known pond out there, to work on improvements at Rock Harbor on the Eastham side of Rock Harbor, split between Orleans and Eastham, and some police station renovations and some dredging in Nauset. And again, going very quickly here in Bourne, they elected two men, James Potter and Jared McDonald, to the selectman seat. This was a five-way race, and was made a little interesting because Michael Blanton, who was a former selectman there, had resigned from the board earlier after he was arrested on domestic violence charges. The case is still going through the courts, so these are allegations, but his seat has been vacant since March. One of these men fills that seat, and the other fills a seat formerly occupied by Don Picard, who decided not to run. Jared McDonald, people will know, is a former Bourne police officer who was shot in the line of duty in 2015 while responding to a scene in Bourne where a Coast Guardsman was killed, and he was shot, and the Coast Guardsman's wife, she was shot as well. And he was certainly appropriately so treated as a hero because he went into the line of fire and was shot. There were some questions that came up right before the election about some internal affairs investigations and discipline that he received as a police officer over the years. But people really came out to support him, and really he had a lot of support in town. And again, stemming whether it was from his service as a police officer, he's a former Marine as well. Or a Marine veteran as well, or the fact that people just thought he was the right man for the job. So he took that race, and those are the two seats filled in Bourne. Orleans agreed to spend a bunch of money on wastewater planning, $4 million to look at the plans. That's kind of a drop in the bucket, if you will, because they have a $58 million plan coming up between 2020 and 2024. So they approved that. And again, that's spending that goes above the proposition 2.5. So they had to approve it at the ballot. 17% turnout there. There was a few other things in town. One of the things that was interesting in Orleans is they agreed to permanently fund $450,000 a year to cover the town's liability for future retiree health insurance and other post-employment benefits. This is something, it's called OPEB in the parlance in the acronym world, but something that all the towns are going to be having to deal with. And so Orleans took a step in that direction, funded a few other things, and defeated, I think for the second time it was defeated at town meeting, a new beach office and restrooms at Skakit Beach, but approved, as we said, the Cape Tech School and some work out at Nauset. We already talked about Falmouth. All the incumbents essentially took the races in Falmouth for selectmen and school committee, planning board. It was a big night for incumbents there, and actually incumbents in a lot of other towns as well, including right. Yarmouth, where the incumbent selectmen, Eric Tolley and Norman Holcomb, were able to beat out a couple of challengers there. And in Yarmouth, it's important because they also approved an override for their school budget, which in Yarmouth, which is coupled with Dennis in the Dennis Yarmouth Regional School District, is a every year issue. I mean, every year Yarmouth is looking at a number that they really have a hard time dealing with. Dennis, on the other hand, has kind of sees students dropping off in terms of attending the school. Yarmouth seeing more students attend the school. Mm. It's not exactly on a student by student basis, but it's pretty close. And Yarmouth feels like they are really shouldering a lot of burden here. But they've done it in a couple of years. They've pretty much said, okay, we're going to pay for it. We have to pay for it. They're constantly trying to figure out ways to make that a little easier on the taxpayers. So that's elections in a nutshell. And again, you're welcome to go to CapeCodTimes.com/politics to kind of dive a little deeper into all those results that we have up online. Big story of the week, big story of the month, big story of the year continues to be the shooting death of Yarmouth Police Sergeant Sean Gannon. And yesterday we were in court and a judge released some more details about what happened on that day. It was April 12th, more than a month ago at this point. And Kristen Young wrote this story. What can you tell us about this,
man? Yeah, so... There were some new details in this, including one that seemed to be entirely absent from prior reporting, which is that an ex-girlfriend of Sergeant of Latanowicz,
who's the person who's alleged to and charged with killing Sergeant Gannon.
Yes, yeah. It's, so, according to this report that had been released yesterday. Latanowicz was texting an ex-girlfriend after he had just allegedly shot Sergeant Gannon and Nero, Gannon's police dog. this there's this, if you can read it all obviously in the story, but there's a there was an exchange, a frantic exchange between Latanowicz and this ex-girlfriend, who was actually brought to the scene there after you know, after they had shooting. after the shooting, so we had some questions, I know, of
I think a lot of people had questions about this. I mean, we were getting phone calls, we were seeing messages on Facebook where people were saying, what happened on that day, and how did this all go down? Obviously, there's an ongoing investigation. There's a trial that will be coming forward. Latanowicz is charged with murder, and a lot of people, you know, certainly look at his record, which is extensive, and wonder why he was out. And all those questions are questions we're pursuing. I know other people have been asking those questions about how he was out at this time, and we know that he was a probation violation, right, that they were going to arrest him on from a 2009 case that involved firearms as well. So this report that's in the police report, which in many cases, in my experience, when you have a murder charge that's come forward, those reports are pretty quickly made available. In this case, it was impounded,
right?
The district attorney's office had sought to impound the record and said that there were various reasons for that. Again, people still had a lot of questions about what happened that day.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's, again, it's a very sad thing, but in pursuing sort of the truth and what happened in the situation, I think, you know, it's important that these details are out there and they're aired out, for those reasons.
So. Yeah. And you mentioned the girlfriend, nobody had been, talking about, really until now. And the idea that he was texting, back and forth with her from the attic where the shooting right. occurred. The district attorney, it's important to point out, had, issued a press release last week with more details, in some ways more details than were even in the report. They had talked about how there had been an initial search of the attic by Sergeant Gannon, mm-hmm. who was posthumously promoted to sergeant. He was an officer at the time. And during that initial search of the attic, they didn't find anything. And then they heard noise and they went back up and they realized there was a second part to the attic and they had removed insulation covering that. Right. This is according to the DA's statement last week. And when that insulation was removed, he was shot, according to police. And so that those details had started to come out. This report gives a little bit more of a timeline. The police had arrived at 2:23 p.m. on that day. The Massachusetts State Police Violent Fugitive Apprehension Squad was involved, which we really hadn't known about. This was a house in Marston's Mills, just to go backwards a little bit. And then this second search had occurred. Sergeant Cannon was shot. He was pronounced dead at 4:05 p.m. So again, gives you a little bit more of a sense of the time. Those text messages, they had times for those. Mm-hmm. So at about 3:40, the defendant at this point was sending text messages to his girlfriend saying things like, I'm taking as many as I can, and basically saying he had shot and killed a police officer.
Yeah.
So those will obviously be details that will be important in trial. Then he called 911 and asked police to get his ex-girlfriend. And she spoke to him, and that's when he came out of the house.
Yeah.
So a lot of details involved there about this. And again, obviously, it is a sad topic. It's a sensitive topic, but there's a question that's ongoing about what happened, how it happened, how it could have been allowed to happen. That people are asking how this person was out at the time, and again, people were asking a lot of questions about that day itself.
Right.
So we get at a lot of that in this story, and we had asked for that. Again, also important to point out that the DA's office, not yesterday, but the day before, had filed their own motion to have the impoundment lifted. But again, we had filed, I think, last week to ask that those documents be made public. And there's a presumption of these documents being public, and there's a very good reason for that. And that's because without documents such as these being public, there's no way to vet and to understand and to, you know, potentially do things differently or find out what went wrong. on whatever level with cases like this. So right. We'll be continuing to look at that no matter what. Looking forward, we have a story coming up, I believe, in tomorrow's paper that's about some tree cutting that occurred out in Barnstable, and there are some folks out there who aren't very happy with it. Our reporter Jeff Spillane is going to be looking at that and finding out, you know, whether things were done properly in cutting down these trees. Whenever trees get cut, certainly on the Cape, it causes a lot of concern among people. And these were some rather large trees. Have you ever been out to Route 6A?
I have, yeah.
There's a gorgeous lot of trees. Those big trees that are along the road, and a lot of them, I think, you know, maybe more than 100 were cut down, and they were done. It was done for a very specific purpose. You can check Cape Cod Times and CapeCodTimes.com tomorrow for more information on that. Thanks a lot for being here. Thanks, Tanner, for agreeing to wear the same blue shirt as I really appreciate that. Tell your friends, share the link, and feel free to reach out to us with any story ideas or tips. All our emails are at CapeCodTimes.com. We're where our news starts on Cape Cod. Until next week, have a good morning and good luck.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.